Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I am Team Leader Sai Bishu, and as always, with me is Sai Prakash as we swim in this ocean of Prema Vahini, which Bhagwan has so graciously gifted us. So we are now in the chapter 17 of Prema Vahini. If you're referring to the original Telugu writing of Bhagwan, then it is chapter 5 in the Telugu Vahini, Prema Vahini book. So till now, in fact, we have spent nearly 4-5 episodes or more in this chapter 17. It's a long chapter, and Bhagwan is stressing a lot on what is the fulcrum of India, the Sanatana Dharma. He's talking about the importance, he's talking about how it has degraded, he's talking about what sustains it, and he talks about how we can regain the glory of the Sanatana Dharma. So let's move on. I will now play for you the 8th segment of chapter 17, and then we'll pray to Bhagwan and see what thoughts he inspires in us.
హిందూ సోదరులారా, భారత పుత్రులారా, సనాతన సంప్రదాయ పరులారా, పురాణకాలపు పురుష లక్షణములు ఎందుపోయెను? సత్యసహన నీతి నియమములు ఎందు దాచితిరి? లెండి, తిరిగి సత్యధర్మ శాంతి నిలయములైన రామరాజ్యమును స్థాపించండి. భారత సోదరులను ప్రేమించండి, సనాతన ధర్మములను అనుష్ఠించండి. ఇప్పుడు దహించుచున్న అజ్ఞాన అశాంతి అక్రమ అసూయలను అగ్నిజ్వాలలను ప్రేమ సహన సత్యములను నీటితో ఆర్పుడు. పవిత్ర పురుషుల పాలనను, ఉత్తమ పురుషుల లక్షణములను, దైవరాజ్యములను జ్ఞాపకమునకు తెచ్చుకొనుడు. తమ తమ తప్పులను తాము గ్రహింపుడు. పరుల తప్పులను వెతుకుటలో వచ్చే సుఖమేమీయూ లేదని దృఢము చేసుకొనుడు. ఇట్టివి వృథా కాలహరణము, కలహకారణము అగును. అట్టి గుణములు వదలుడు. ఈ తరుణము తప్పినా చేయునది మరేమీ? ఆలసింపుకుడు. నిరుత్సాహమునకు చోటివ్వక గడిచిన అవినీతులకు స్వస్తి చెప్పి పశ్చాత్తాప పరులై దైవ ప్రార్థనలు, సత్కార్యములు, సోదర ప్రేమలు ప్రవేశపెట్టుడు. సనాతనపు రామరాజ్యమును స్థాపింపుడు. ఇట్టి రాజ్యమును నిర్మింపగోరి ఈ సనాతన సారథి బయలుదేరి తన సైన్య సహాయంతో చేదోడు వాదోడుగా నిలువగలడు.
హిందూ బ్రదరన్, చిల్డ్రన్ ఆఫ్ భారత్, ఫాలోవర్స్ ఆఫ్ ద సనాతన ధర్మ, వాట్ హస్ హ్యాపెన్ టు ది ఏజ్ ఓల్డ్ హ్యూమన్ వర్చ్యూస్? వేర్ హ్యావ్ ట్రూత్, tolerance, morality and discipline gone? Wake up, re-establish the Ramarajya of truth, righteousness and peace. Love your fellow brethren, follow the Sanatana Dharma. Douse the burning flames of ignorance, peacelessness, disorder and jealousy with the waters of love, tolerance and truth. Remind yourself of the rule of the holy personages, the characteristics of virtuous people and the reign of gods. Each one should accept one's follies and be confirmed in the belief that there is no happiness in finding faults of others. That will only be a waste of time and lead to quarrels. Leave such qualities. Do not lose this moment. If this opportunity is missed, what else can be done? Do not delay. Do not give scope to dejection. Say finis to all unrighteousness of the past, be repentant and tread the path of prayer to God, good deeds and brotherly love. Establish the Ramarajya of yore. This Sanatana Sarathi has descended to stand hand in hand with his army to aid in this endeavor of establishing Ramarajya.
So that's quite a powerful call, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think it's like a clarion call where Swami is really telling, wake up, what are you doing?
Yes.
Slumbering about, wake up and let come to the light. I think it's a very inspiring paragraph.
Yes, and Swami is so particular that, you know, Ramarajya has to be reestablished. And, you know, I was just reading about Ramarajya, because we all the time talk about Ramarajya, but what exactly is Ramarajya and how was Ramarajya? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, in the Ramayana we do read the entire story of how Rama was born, and then Rama went to the forest and, you know, and killed Ravana and returned to Ayodhya. And, you know, after that, the story sort of stops.
Stops, yes. Mm.
But actually, they say that this is a very, very small part of Rama's earthly sojourn.
Okay.
Because after that, the Ramarajya continued for thousands of years.
Oh.
But there is not much of documentation that we have of how. But it was such a fantastic phase, I think, that, you know, that has remained in the consciousness of humanity, that this is how the kingdom should be, this is how a king should be. And Ayodhya means where there is no war. And, you know, there are very beautiful descriptions also of Ramarajya in Valmiki Ramayana. Mm. And so he says that Ramarajya is where there are no wars, where there are where nobody hurts the other. Even if you leave a bag of gold on the street, no one will touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And where Dharma was the stepping stone, where the Shastras were the guiding principles, where the yogis and rishis were spearheading and guiding the kings about governance, where Vedas were respected, where rain and shine happened on time, where the trees and the fruits were where blossoming at the right time, where there was plenty of crops, where the Brahmins did their duty, mm-hmm. where the Kshatriyas performed their obligations, and there was, most importantly, every creature felt pleased.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was intent on virtue. And turning their eyes mm-hmm. towards Rama alone, nobody killed one another. Why? Because they were only thinking of Rama. They cannot do it because Rama would not like it. All the people were endowed with excellent characteristics. All were engaged in virtue. Mm-hmm. And Rama was engaged in the kinship, they say, like this, for 10,000 years.
Oh.
So the Rama Rajya, you know, we know, perhaps we know so little of the Rama Rajya. In one of the discourses, Swami says that there was a big board hung in front of Ayodhya. It said, those who abide by Satya and Dharma mm-hmm. are free from the fear of death. Mm. This was sort of the slogan.
Okay.
Of Ayodhya. I mean, it was the Satya and Dharma were so much a part of the soil, the stream, the veins, and the blood of people. And Swami says, as is the king, so are the subjects. Yatha Raja, Tatha Praja.
Absolutely.
And as is the king, so are the ministers. As the ministers, so are the administrators. As the administrators, so the people. And Rama laid down the procedures, and all the three brothers, Bharata, Lakshmana and Shatrughna, they exercised great care mm-hmm. and attention to ensure that dharma is practiced at every juncture and at every sphere of activities in the kingdom. And if there was anything that was slightly deviating from dharma, they would report to the king, and it was, no one was given any scope even to transgress dharma. I mean, so that was sort of an utopian world. But that's what happened. And I think, as Swami talks about, you know, if the leadership, leadership is that, that's why it's so important. Because you had a leader like that.
Right.
You know, so people love to live up to his ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, you know, everyone was competing with each other mm-hmm. in terms of virtue. In fact, you know, this reminds me in some ways of the hostel also, because, you know, in hostel also, I don't know if it ever happens in any other hostel, but in the Satya Sai hostel, I remember, mm-hmm. we were competing with each other in our prayers, because okay. we wanted Swami's attention.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, anything for that sake. So, even I used to think, you know, I should pray harder than the other guy, you know, so that Swami gives me attention. I think that is something such a, you know, healthy.
It's like, you know, that often quoted incident where Swami gives the indication and the students run into Trayi.
Yes.
And all the pots yes. on the way are all broken.
Yes. Yeah.
And the gardener would come with a long face, and Swami would say, why are you so upset? They are doing their duty, you do your duty. But what is more important is, in today's day and age,
yes.
where do you find youngsters
yes.
running so madly in love for the Lord?
God, yes. Absolutely. I mean, in fact, that's what happens. One of the, when that incident happened,
mm-hmm.
Apparently there was one VIP there, and he felt that, boys were quote unquote indisciplined. How could they do that? And that is where Swami says that, you know, you tell me in which, you know, in the Bangalore or Mumbai or Delhi, is there any university where, you know, youngsters, I mean, college going youngsters mm-hmm. Be so mad after God. So I think, I mean, it's really so heartening when you read the description of Ramarajya and I think that's what we talk about in Golden Age when Swami says in the Golden Age and people talk about Golden Age coming back and all that.
Mm.
But well, Swami very clearly says that where truth, tolerance, morality, and discipline, you know,
yes.
so those are sort of the watchwords of the Ramarajya.
In fact, it's very interesting because I think yesterday or so, there was this news about somebody losing their purse in the metro.
Okay.
Okay. And with all the cards and, you know, the credit cards, debit cards, and even possibly an Aadhaar card or in Delhi, in the metro, crowded metro.
Mm.
And 10 days later, he got back the entire purse with everything in it.
Wow.
And with a note cautioning him, please be a little more careful from next time. Possibly.
So this is in Delhi?
This is in Delhi. Mm. This is in Delhi. And, you know, that was the R of Ramarajyam, I thought.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, there is, in this soil, it is there. I mean, that's why Swami says, no, Swami took birth in Bharat because it is there. Swami says, it has to be mine. Yes.
Goodness is there. And Swami has, whenever he has spoken about society,
yes.
so he has often said that, you know, fear of sin, love of God, yes. and morality in society. Deva Preeti, Papa Bhiti, Sanganiti. And I think he has kind of defined these three as, you know, the basic, features or the basic yes. necessities for a good society.
Yes.
For Ramarajya.
Yes, absolutely.
Deva Preeti, Papa Bhiti, Sanganiti. And like Swami saying, Satya and Dharma should be the pillar stones. But what is Dharma? And what is Satya? So, if you look at it just from a perspective of an individual trying to do whatever he or she wants, is it correct or is it not correct? And then, to my mind, there is, of course, a legal angle to everything, and there is a moral angle to everything.
Yes.
So, nobody can take you to court for shouting at somebody else, or if, for example, the child is not behaving correctly, if the parent is shouting at the child, nobody can take the parent to court for
that. At least in India.
At least in India. Okay, we are talking about India right now. But then there is also the spiritual angle.
Yes.
So I think if everybody is conscious about the legal, the moral, and the spiritual angles, I think that in some sort defines what the Ramarajya is.
Yes, I think everything, whatever you do, you have to keep questioning yourself, you know. How genuine is this act?
Mm.
How righteous is this act?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are so many situations where you don't know what is right and what is wrong.
Okay.
Very difficult to define. There are so many sort of these dharmic challenges.
Absolutely.
You know, that's a different topic altogether. But, you know, I remember reading Dharmavahini and I got this clue from there. And I feel that it could be one way to ascertain whether what I am doing is dharmic or not.
Mm-hmm.
If what I am doing is absolutely selfless,
okay,
then you can be sure,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you are on the path of dharma. Because generally all our vices come, you know, the moment we become selfish. So And what is Bhagwan? God is love, and love is selflessness. Ultimately, that's what it is. So many times, you know, when this dilemma happens, the one thing is to ascertain this is, you know, when if I do act A or if I do act B, so what is the quotient of my selflessness in both?
Okay.
So I think whichever has the higher measure, a selflessness quotient, perhaps that is more dharmic, is what I would think. Yes, I think that is one maybe which I also apply in my life.
Very interesting perspective, because selflessness, that's true, because I'm just trying to think of a situation where being selfless can also be wrong. And I'm not able to get anything in my mind.
I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, if you're genuinely selfless, really. It means you.
Because there can't be. If you're selfless, then you're not thinking about yourself at all.
So you will not do any of those things.
You will not harm others.
See, there can be situations where you do a particular thing which, according to society, is wrong. Or according to society, is not acceptable. Possibly. Okay. But you, in your heart, is very clear about what you have done.
Okay.
You know, so, and then, so whether it is dharmic or not, that God or whatever his consciousness will decide. But you know that, okay, perhaps for the whole world what I've done is wrong, but I know that what I've done is dharmic.
In fact, we quoted this example in one of our sessions because it's about Indian culture and, you know, Sanatan Dharma.
Yes.
After Shankaracharya took up the sannyasa, and then he went, he told, but he gave his word to his mother.
Yes.
That, you know, when the last moment comes, I will come and do your last rites. Because as a sannyasi, you're not supposed to do that. But then he did it from his heart.
Yes.
And so the whole society turned against him.
Yes.
And they, in fact, they said, we will not come forward to help. And he did his mother's last rites all on his own. But he stood up for what he believed in. And so in that sense, he is not hurting himself. So ultimately, Swami says, selflessness.
Yes.
There is a very interesting correlation between this and himsa and ahimsa. Swami says, ahimsa, yes, you don't hurt others. Selfishness is like you take advantage of others for your own selfish gains. But then, ahimsa is, Swami says, you should not hurt others, but you should not hurt yourself,
yourself also. Yeah, that's
so
tricky.
You are like the first in the line.
Yes.
And make sure you don't hurt yourself.
Yes.
And demean yourself. Yes. Because there is that divine spark in you.
Yes. Yeah, I think that is something very important. Because many times I think, you know, we are very clear, okay, I have not hurt anyone. I have not done anything, you know, wrong. I have not... But you have done wrong to yourself.
Right.
You know, you have perhaps done something because of which there is a lot of peacelessness within you.
Right.
So you have hurt yourself, and that is very important.
And thinking about Ramarajya and thinking about society as such, one aspect is, of course, what we talked, Deva Priti, Papa Bhiti, Sanganiti. And the other is that, you know, that very beautiful hierarchy of Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti, Parameshti. So, in a sense, it is like saying that if all these four aspects of Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti, Parameshti, if all of them are harmonious, and there is no, I would say, disagreement, there is no selfishness of individuals towards society or society towards nature or nature towards God. So this hierarchy which is there, Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti, Parameshti. Now, it's very funny, like if you read, for example, if they say that today China has brought down its carbon dioxide emission levels, and it's achieved a target which it was supposed to achieve by 2020. And there is something to feel happy about. But who has put these standards? These standards are put by us.
Yes. Yeah.
It's, we were the ones who polluted the atmosphere. And then we put our own limitations and our own this thing and say, yes, of course, it's a great thing to reduce the carbon dioxide emission.
Yes.
But I'm saying we were the ones who polluted the atmosphere in the first place.
Yes.
So, you know, there is no harmony in that when you say Vyashti, Samashti. Now, for example, individuals, individuals all around, you know, there is so much of news going around about exploitation of various kinds.
Yes.
And suddenly so many things are coming out to the surface. And even as far as sports and games, and you see the recent event of, you know, ball tampering and all that.
Yeah.
What do these events tell us?
Yes. So that's what, you know, because some selfishness came in, that's why adharmic act.
Exactly. Yes. So it's a sense of, you know, I want to win.
Yes.
And
at any cost.
At any cost. Mm. So there's again this beautiful concept of means versus ends.
Ends, yes.
And yes, everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to win a game. But then in Ramarajya, will anybody consider the ends more important than the means?
Like, you know, talking about Ramarajya and games, you know, you remember the story that Swamish talked about Rama and Bharata in their childhood when they're playing this ball?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, where Rama as the elder brother wants to ensure that Bharata wins.
Wins, exactly.
So that Bharata has the joy of being the winner.
Mm-hmm.
And here Bharata does not want to win because he wants Rama to win because he's the elder brother.
What a tough game it would have been.
but that is sort of the spirit of what Bhagwan is talking about. In fact, there's a very interesting thing I read. Mm-hmm. You know, talking about this spirit. Sir Abdul Kalam talks about it in his book. So what happens is when they decide to set up the nuclear rocket launching station in Tumba, in Kerala.
Mm-hmm.
So their main thing was that they need to get the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so Professor Vikram Sarabhai, who was then heading, I think, the Bhabha Atomic Research Center, who was the spearhead of the Indian space missions then. So he goes to the government of Kerala. And so that was that particular area was because of its position, geographic position in the equator and all that. So it was the ideal place. But right at that location, there was a church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very ancient Saint Mary Magdalene church. And so the government said, you know, it's okay, but, you know, you have to convince the people there.
Mm-hmm.
It was very difficult to get that land. And so they thought about it. They said, you know, we'll try to give some alternate area to build a church. So the only thing that had to be done was you have to go and speak to this bishop.
Okay.
You know, one Reverend Father Peter Bernard Pereira.
Mm-hmm.
So, Professor Vikram Sarabhai approached the bishop on a Saturday evening, and they said that meeting turned out to be historical, and that Reverend Father, he said, "Oh Vikram, you are asking my children's abode, you are asking for my abode, you are asking for my God's abode, how can I give it?" Okay, and so both of them, even though, you know, this discussion went on, they were, there was some very nice camaraderie between them. So both are very passionate about, you know, what they were trying to communicate. And so finally the Reverend Father says that, you know, Professor, you come tomorrow to the church Sunday morning at 9 a.m. So Professor Vikram Sarabhai goes to the church. And at that time the prayer was progressing, and the recitation of Bible was going on by Father Pereira. And after the prayer was over, so the bishop calls Vikram Sarabhai to this dais, and he introduces him and he says, you know, dear children, here is a scientist, very big scientist, Vikram Sarabhai. Do you know what science does for all of us?
Mm.
He says, you know, all of us experience, including in this church, you know, we have this light. It is because of electricity. You know, I'm able to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
It is because of the mic, which is made possible thanks to technology. You know, there are so many of our mothers, fathers, you know, they have problems. They go to the hospital and they're getting treated there. You know, it is because of technology and medical science. So science through technology has enhanced our quality of life. You know, it has made us happy. It has, you know, given us so many good things. And same thing, what do I do also as a preacher? Mm-hmm. I pray for you. Mm. I pray for your well-being. I pray for your peace. So basically, both of us are doing the same thing.
Okay.
We both of us want to make your life comfortable. Mm. So what Vikram is doing and what I am doing, both are same. Basically, science and spirituality, both are trying to get the grace of Almighty so that all humanity can live in peace and prosperity. Mm. You know, in body and mind, we should be in peace. And he says, dear children, you know what, this Professor Vikram, he wants to give us a new place of worship, mm-hmm. you know, in a new area. So in a new area near the sea coast, we will have an alternate facility. So what do you think, dear children, can we give our abode? Can we give our abode so that this God abode can be used for a great scientific mission? What do you think?
Mm, amazing. Mm.
And there was, they said, there was absolutely pin drop silence there, and all of them got up and said, Amen.
Oh.
And so that is how, you know, they got that area, which is one of the very prime rocket launching stations for India. And the church also continued to be a very historic place because it was just next to this rocket launching station. So that church and the space activities, even till this day, you know, they are so much hand in hand. People who go to the church know about the space, and people who come for space go to the church. I mean, that is how it has, that church has become an important center of learning where thousands of people learn about the dynamic history of the space program of India, as well as how, when two great minds meet, how such wonderful things can happen. You know, when you're talking about this harmony. So,
really? Well, in fact, another point which comes about here in this paragraph, as Swami is saying, which I'm reminded, I think Swami mentions even in the 1990 Samakos discourses, in the early first chapter where he's talking about Indian culture and spirituality, where he's talking about refinement.
Yes.
He says refinement and samskriti. Samskriti, yes, is refinement.
Yes.
And I'm really not able to pinpoint whether it's in that discourse or somewhere else. But I remember this very clearly. He says, what is refinement? He says, don't find faults in others. Hmm. Find faults only within yourself.
Wow.
Don't point a finger at others. Point only at yourself. And that's exactly what Swami is saying here. Each one should realize his own faults and understand that there is no use in searching for faults, yes, in others. That is mere waste of time. It also breeds quarrels.
Yes.
So give up that trait. If this opportunity is missed, what else can be done?
Yes. In fact, you know, when you think about it, most of our sorrows in life, most of our sort of depressing moments in life are because, you know, we blame someone for what has happened to us. Something has happened to us.
Absolutely.
And we feel very hurt. We feel dejected.
Mm-hmm.
We feel someone has wronged us.
Right.
And if you continue to see the situation as someone has conspired against you, and, you know, or someone has treated you the way it was not to be done,
mm-hmm,
and you don't deserve it, you have done nothing to be treated that way, and if you continuously point finger at that person or that group of people, then, you know, you will continue to feel dejected and depressed, that you're never going to have peace. And you'll never reconcile also with it. The other person perhaps never even felt that, you know, the other person perhaps felt that what he or she did was right. And so they are never going to come and, you know, sort of apologize. And you continuously will feel that, you know, they have wronged me. So, and that only builds up in you again in more and more, and it actually sends you in a downward spiral of depression. And I feel the only way to get out of this is if we believe, and this is what Swami has told us so many times, and again something which I've also applied in my life and it's really helped, is, and in fact, once you apply this principle, you will see it happen also,
mm-hmm,
how it works. Basically, if we constantly think that whatever I'm experiencing is what I have created for myself,
right,
then you won't point a finger at others. If mm, suppose something beautiful happened, mm, great, God's grace. If something wrong happened,
mm-hmm,
then it is not because that person didn't treat me well or that person wanted to snob me or whatever. It is because in some way, I have created that for myself.
And it is good for me.
And it is good for me, mm, you know. So at least from now on, let me try and ensure that the future such things don't happen. So sometimes it could be one small act you have done in the past, but it has taken a gigantic proportion with time, you know.
See, also the whole question of attitude and
yes.
mind, you know.
Yes.
If you're in a situation where you're facing gross injustice.
Yes.
And you feel that people are really not treating you the way you ought to be, and you're really vexed up when you have that. So what is the way out of such situations? And of course, you can fight back. Nobody's saying that you should not give your best. You should stand for what you
yes.
really stand for. But when you are doing that, you need not get depressed.
Yes.
You need not feel sad. You need
yes.
not feel upset.
Yes.
And one other way, like what you were saying, is think that you yourself has made the situation for yourself. That is one way. Maybe one step easier than that would be think that Swami wants you to go through this.
Go through that. Yeah, obviously.
Swami wants you to go through this.
For some learning.
It is good
yeah.
for you.
It's good for me. Yeah. Yes.
And here, very beautifully, the way Swami is saying, don't search for faults in others. Search
yes.
for faults in yourself.
Yourself.
And I'm really tempted to kind of recall one personal incident.
Mm-hmm.
It's a I would say a lesson for a lifetime.
Mm.
And this was during the preparation of the Prema Pravaham music program
yes.
that we had presented in Swami's presence on 85th birthday. So this was a beautiful divinely inspired idea conceived by Professor Venkatraman, where he said, like, just as, you know, Lavakusha sang in Rama's presence, Swami's students should sing his
yes.
life story in his presence. So that is how the whole concept started, and we were working on it and all that. And the lyrics for all the songs were written by different people, and the background music scoring and the recording was going on in Chennai, because these were to be like music videos. So we had to get the karaoke tracks done, and the boys would sing on the karaoke tracks in Bhagwan's presence along with the video going, because if it's a live performance, there will not be any sync with the video. So it was like a live video presentation along with student sing. So it was quite a complex project, and it was going well. So the tunes are already being made in Chennai. And as is always the case, we sent the lyrics to Bhagwan. And Bhagwan saw them and kept them on the table, and then started the dilemma. So there were a few elders who felt that, the lyrics can be changed.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics should be different, and they are not good. But what is happening? Already the music is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting this message from a few others that, you know, some of the elders are feeling like this, you should consider doing. I said, I don't have a choice. The music is already going on. And we are cutting very close to the birthday. We are already in the month of November. They have to tune, they have to compose, they have to record, they have to send, our boys have to practice, and I have to make the music videos.
Mm.
I have to edit the videos on the tracks.
Yes. Yes.
There's absolutely no time.
No time.
And this message that, you know, there is discontent and that it has to be changed was coming for 2 days, 3 days, and 2-3 times in each day.
Mm-hmm.
So I would get the message from somebody or the other saying that, you know, you should stop this. Just stop everything and start afresh.
Oh my God.
Just stop it and start afresh. And I was saying, no, how can we do that? You know, it's already going on, this, that. And there was this battle going on for 3-4 days. And 3-4 days at that time, you know, first week of November already, it's like very, very tight. And one day I sat in my room in the office, and I looked at Swami's photo, and I said, no, this is not happening. There's something I'm missing out here.
Hmm.
I'm missing out something here. And I literally sat there in front of Swami's photo, and I said, Swami, I know what is wrong. I am thinking that so and so, or a group of people, they are stopping this program from happening, or they are having some issues about the compositions. And I am thinking that I am responsible for this program to happen. Both are wrong. I cannot be responsible. I don't have any responsibility. Neither can they stop it if it is your will.
Yes.
The very fact that they are able to express their point of view, because you want them to express. And I am thinking that I am running the show, this is completely wrong. Swami, today I surrender. This is exactly just a prayer to Swami in my room. I say, Swami, I surrender, and I say, however you want this program, you want, if you wish that these entire lyrics should be, you know, removed and a new set of lyrics have to come, you will take care how the composition will happen, what will happen, everything is in your hands. Who am I to say yes or no? I am not doing anything. It is you who is doing everything. So when I stop finding fault with the people who are having raising issues, and you know, till then, the more I was trying to find fault, how can they say this? How can
Then there is more stress, and more there is more stress, and disgust,
then, you know,
and
tension is building up, yes. And there is so much of pressure. And then the moment I left it in Swami's hands, I said, Swami, you are the one who is making them raise these issues. You are the one who has got to solve it. And you are the one who is making the music happen in Chennai also. So, which is you, which is not you? Everything is you.
So, let it happen. If it has to happen, it will happen. If it does.
I cease to take the responsibility of this program. Who am I?
It is your program.
It is Swami's birthday. It is Swami's program.
Yes.
And I am under the illusion and delusion that I have to do something about it. You won't believe it. Next morning at 6:30 or 7, I get a call from the same person who was saying that, you know, we should change it, we should stop the work. He said, I just got a call from some of the elders and they said, maybe this is Swami's will. Why don't we just go ahead with the way it is?
Oh my God. Wow.
Last minute, just the morning, 6:37, I get the call saying that maybe this is what Swami wants. See, for Swami, the program is not important.
Yes.
For Swami, that, you know, that we should perform something, he wants you to learn that lesson.
Yes. Yes.
He wants you to learn. So, if we are constantly blaming somebody, saying, so-and-so is not like this, so-and-so should have been like this, so-and-so should be like that, I think the more and more we try to find what is wrong in me.
Yes.
What is wrong in me? Why am I attracting such a response from so-and-so?
Yes.
There must be something really wrong in me. Otherwise, I will not be attracting such a thing.
Yes.
So, you know, this way of looking within yourself can slowly start making you believe that there is Swami in everybody.
Yes. And I think that is when you will also be able to unlock within you that great reserves of strength, resilience, peace,
right,
and competence also to do his work, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like, we are not claiming anything here, but we also speak ill about others behind their backs. We also are all the time, you know, talking, oh, why this person is like that, why that person is like that, this should not have happened, that should not happen, why that person, you know, that person is like that only. The moment we say this person and that person, theoretically speaking, we are pointing a finger at ourselves. We are pointing a finger at ourselves, who is also part of divinity. But to reach that state of awareness is really, really a matter of, you know, interest, as Swami would say. It's a matter of interest. Yes. Are you really interested in it?
What the intensity of our interest?
Intensity of our interest.
Yes.
And that earnestness, to actually try to put that part of his teaching into our daily life. I think if that happens, then automatically, you know, just like in a machinery, you have those, the turning wheels.
Yes.
You know, one, they just sit and get locked in one. So everything just falls in place. Everything just falls in place the moment you actually surrender.
Yes.
And you touch
and
Swami,
you change your perspective.
You change your perspective.
Everything changes then. In fact, you know, talking about this golden age, you know, I've had very mixed reactions from people, you know. So, someone, when I asked, you know, what do you think about the golden age? And he says, yeah, it is going to come. You know, in, Swami has told that in this day, when you calculate what Bhagavan has told on this day, and this many years, so from this day, golden age is going to start. Someone else says, no, in Swami, in my interview, Swami said, no, this day. So, and you compare both, there's some 20, 30 years of difference. So there are so many people who have various versions of when the golden age is going to begin, or, and there are so many, somebody else also who said, what are you talking? Golden is already here.
We are all come and gone also.
Come and gone also. So, you know, it all depends on whether you are in golden age or not. Completely depends on you. So if you bring that shift in your consciousness, then every day you are in golden age.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm so tempted to repeat it again because of doing so many radio talks. You know, you tend to repeat a lot of stuff because you know little and you want to repeat those points again. But the interesting thing is, you know, when somebody asked Nisargadatta Maharaj, they asked him, there is war going on. There is so many things going on, injustice. What are you doing? He said, of course, I am doing what can be done in the best possible manner to, you know, do good for all. He said, what are you doing? You're just sitting here. You're sitting here and you're talking. He says, isn't that enough? So they said, no. Well, how is it enough? He said, what is the best form of help? What is the best form of help? And everybody said this, that. He said, no. The best form of help is putting the other person beyond the need for help.
Oh, wow.
The best form of help that you can ever do to anybody is to put that person beyond the need for help.
Wow.
So, you know, in that sense, first, he says, to be able to do that, first, you should be beyond the need for help. So, you know, if you want to, you want to really see good in others. You want to say, you should not see bad in yourself also.
Yes.
You should behave in such a way that, you know, this is what Swami would like. This is what, you should be dharmic.
Yes.
And then as you refine yourself, you will start seeing that everybody's response to you is also like that. So if you want to really help others, to put others beyond the need for help, first you have to help yourself.
Yes. Wow.
That's a very
deep
and very interesting thought. One more, you know, story which just comes to mind. And again, I don't remember exact location from where I got this and which discourse. And Swami says, then there were these two people who were quarreling. And he says that this fellow, one person says, see, I sold the land to him.
Yes.
And so there is one person who sells the land to the other person.
Yes.
And the other farmer, when he's stealing the land, he finds a pot of gold.
Gold, yes.
And then he says, he goes back to the panchayat and he says, this land is his. It has been his all the while. Yes. So this gold belongs to him. And this person says, no. I have sold the land to him. So whatever comes from that belongs to him.
Yes.
I mean, just imagine if one of the capitalists was walking around there and if they had witnessed this scene. They say,
how foolish. How dumb can people be, they'll think.
See, it's very, very interesting story because they valued the values of Satya and Dharma more than their own, you know, personal and health, you know, family comfort. And, you know, I get more wealth, I can get more comfort.
Yes.
But Satya and Dharma were given the most.
In fact, you know, when we started the session, you talked about this purse. You know, somebody in Delhi finding a purse.
Right.
In fact, sometime back, Reader's Digest conducted a global social experiment.
Okay.
To find out how honest are people. So they took 192 wallets.
Okay.
And they quote unquote lost these wallets in different cities around the world. And in every wallet they put a cell phone number, they put a family photo, they put some coupons and they kept the business card plus $50.
Okay.
You know, equivalent of $50. And so they dropped this in 16 cities of the world. So they left it in parks, in shopping malls, in sidewalks. And, you know, they were waiting to see what is going to happen. And interestingly, 11 out of the 12 12 wallets in Finland returned. So they said Finland
perfectly without any
They returned, you know, so basically someone found, so out of the 12, 11 came back to them because someone thought that, oh my god, someone has lost it, you know, that person perhaps needs all this information, and so they returned. So I felt that was something interesting. I was saying, which is the next country? And the next country turned out to be India.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting.
That's very heartening. See, and the next was, of
and
course...
And which year was this?
I think not very long ago, just 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
And 9 out of 12. So, next was 9. Mm. So, 9 out of 12 in Mumbai got returned.
Okay.
And this Rahul Roy, you know, the one guy, 27-year-old, one video editor who found this purse, he says that, you know, my conscience won't let me do such a thing, you know, because the wallet is such a big thing for everyone. All their important documents are in it. So how could I just not return?
Amazing.
And then someone else said, you know, that, well, I'm the mother of two and I teach my children to be honest all the time. So this is what my parents taught me, and how could I not return? I mean, it was just natural for me to do it.
Very beautiful, very inspiring.
And interestingly, I read a similar story just perhaps a week or two ago in, again, India's national newspapers. Mm. So there is this person by name Yatin Naik. He's from Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 53-year-old now. Mm-hmm. And what he does every day, 3 to 4 hours every evening, is he goes to this Andheri railway station and he looks for wallets which have been discarded, you know. Maybe pickpockets would have taken the money and left the wallets. And then he finds the owner of all these wallets and he returns. And he's been doing this for 10 years now.
My God.
This is, you know.
And he finds purses, wallets and
Yeah. Yeah, he finds. He says that on an average, he has found nearly at least 2 lost or stolen wallets every day.
My goodness.
And apparently, so, Andheri has among the highest crime rates in the Western Railway. And now with the metro coming up, there are a lot of more commuters there. Mm. But he says, you know, this gives me so much joy. And when people, you know, get back their precious documents, you know.
Absolutely, their cards.
And you know, what a hassle it is to again get your passport done or get your Aadhaar done or get your, you know.
Your basic Aadhaar itself is shaken.
yeah, exactly. So, and it's not as if, you know, and he says, you know, I want to do more. But he's also, he works as a small-time, you know, official in a sugar factory. So, he doesn't really have resources to, you know, go out and do it in different cities. But you would want to do, I mean, that is there. But every day, at least for that Andheri station, he's been doing. And he says, but there are times when people get mad also with him. This is, you know, because perhaps there was more money and money is not there. And they vent their frustration at him, you know, because it could be something very important, you know, for someone. But then he takes these people and, you know, he goes to the police station and he tries to help. But, you know, he says, this whole, you know, I do it only for blessings and I do it only for the smiles that I see on the people's faces. You know, what difference it makes to them.
Absolutely. So beautiful. So amazing.
So, and he says, you know, he's kept a list of all the people, you know, he has met. Mm-hmm. Because it's quite a job. You know, call up their numbers and go to their home, wherever, Mumbai is such a huge city, and, you know, and deliver them, you know. And so he notes down the address and, you know, he makes a documentation of everything that he has done. And he says, you know, in his moments of, you know, being with himself, he says it's just so, feels so good to sit and just go through those pages, you know.
Fills him with number of people whom
he has helped, and, you know, it's so, you know, I think he's in a way living in one golden age by himself.
Right.
Every person is living in.
In fact, truth and honesty is such an important aspect of the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Like Swami would say, if you speak one lie, then you'll have to speak a million lies too.
Lies.
So if you speak the truth all the time, it's the easiest
thing to do.
And honesty is something. In fact, again, recently there was this news of somebody starting a bookstore, I think in Dubai, or I'm not really sure of where it was, where they said, we have not put anybody. There is a jar and the prices are printed on the books. You come pick your books and leave the exact change there and
yes.
go.
And they are those paid forward restaurants.
Mm.
Isn't it? Where, you know, you don't have to pay. You eat and you give whatever you want, or you pay for the other person who's... Well, I think... And I feel... And all these experiments have really worked out. You know, you would think that if I open a restaurant and I say that people can come here and eat whatever they want and whatever they would like to pay, they can pay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, such restaurants... I was seeing a video sometime back. All of them have been... You will think that it makes no sense. You will think that, you know, people just come, exploit and go, you know, and they cannot survive. Just like in the hospital came as a free hospital, it will not survive.
Mm.
But, you know, but time and again, it is proved that you have got to have that faith. You have got to take that leap of faith. You have got to believe in it and it will work. It will definitely work and it will change. Mm. It will change the world.
In fact, it's a very interesting, slightly diagonal thought. There is this place in that it's called Shani Shiknapur in India, where there are no doors.
No doors. Shani Shiknapur, near Shirdi.
Near Shirdi.
Yes.
Where there are no doors. Even the shops and everywhere.
They are God-fearing. Shani.
The fear of God is there.
They should have love for God
and fear of sin.
Yes.
And
But in Rama Raja, Swami, there was love for God. They would not do it for Rama.
For Rama's sake, exactly. I think
that is what...
love for God, fear of sin. Not fear of punishment. God will punish me.
But love for God. I think, you know, other day also I was reading about Dr. Mohan, you know, the member of the Central Trust,
right.
Who was also recently, he was awarded from the American Diabetic Association, the ADA award, which no physician, no Indian physician has ever got actually.
Really?
It's such a distinguished award for his service in treatment of diabetes. He's also the chairman and the chief diabetology at the Dr. Mohan's, you know, Diabetes Specialty Center. He has his own research foundation also, he's done yeoman service to millions of people in the treatment of diabetes. And Government of India also awarded him Padma Shri sometime back. So, once when, you know, we did a series of interviews with him in Radio Sai, so I asked him once, you know, whether any occasion where, you know, as you were progressing in this venture, you had to compromise on your values, because, you know, there are 16 diabetic specialty centers opened up in various parts of South India. I mean, there are many are in Chennai. And he said, yes. I said, you know what, when we set up our unit in Hyderabad, so that was our first venture outside Tamil Nadu. So it was a new place. So what he did was, he called many patients and practicing physicians, you know, general physicians, a specialist in general medicine. And he thought that, you know, he will, for a few weeks, he will conduct these sessions and he will share whatever he has learned about the treatment of diabetes. So he did these sessions free of cost.
Okay.
He said, you know, I will share whatever I have learned. And also people will know that, you know, there is this new setup. And so at the end of the whole training session, he gave, you know, booklets and learning material and everything. And he said that now that, you know, you are in a better position to treat, so please let us help people with more clarity in how we can treat diabetes. And in case there is any condition which you are not able to treat, you know, I'm setting up the thing here. So, you know, for any complicated cases, we are always here to help you in any way we can. So when he mentioned that, then someone got up and he said, okay, so what is your kickback? Okay. So they said, okay, we know all this. So basically you want patients. We will refer patients to you, but how much are we going to get for that? And he was really stumped. You know, it was like a bolt from the blue for him, because that was not there in the mind at all. He went there with a genuine intention to help. And he said, No, I'm not even, how can you ask, you know? First of all, I've given you free training for all these months. And he says, the person says, you know what, let's be frank. The going rate is 20%. You want 25, 30, you know, if you want more patients, then you should give us more percentage. Then, you know, we'll send you patients. And he says, I'm not going to do this. I am a Sai Baba devotee. I have my principles and I have my ethics. I am never going to get into any of this. So if you don't want to send the patients, I mean, this is not, I'm not doing so that you send patients to me. I'm doing here so that you can treat patients better. And so they start that center, and 6 months over, 1 year over, and that center is making loss after loss. They're not having enough patients, and you know. So 2 years go by, and it is just in red. And so, you know, there was one Mr. Shastri who had worked with Dr. Mohan in Chennai for 14, 15 years. So since he's an experienced hand and trusted hand, he sent him there. And now that person says, you know, what do we do? Because, you know, this is not how we function. You know, for how many years can we go on with continuous loss? Balance sheet is bleeding here. And so 2.5 years go by. So it's the month of December. And then Dr. Mohan says, okay, fine. Just give it two, three months. And if you're not able to, you know, see any good progress, then obviously we cannot be perennially in loss. So we'll close down the thing. You come back to Chennai, you know. We'll do different things in Chennai. There's no problem. So they take that decision. And Dr. Mohan says that after December, in the next month, in January, suddenly, there were so many patients. He says that we have done nothing different in just that 1 month. There were no advertisements, there were no publicity, no kickbacks, nothing. Whatever, however we are functioning, you know, we stuck to our principles, we stuck to our procedures. But suddenly, everything changed. And in 2-3 months, they had so many patients, and you know, that center started becoming a very successful venture. And of course, later on, they started centers abroad in Muscat and all that. But
Dharmo Rakshati,
Rakshita. But you got to have that that courage, that absolutely. Courage and that faith in the power of truth.
Absolutely.
And then that comes, you know, when you are centered within. I think absolutely. That's what we are talking about, right, isn't it? Right. Sanatana Dharma is all about you relying on the Sanatana for the Dharma. So, and I think I feel the most powerful sentence, one very powerful sentence, you know, in this whole segment is, Swami says, this Sanatana Sarathi has descended to stand hand in hand with his army to aid in this endeavor of establishing Ramarajya. And he's doing that, you know, he's standing hand in hand with anyone who is trying to live by Satya and Dharma. And I think there are any number of such examples. In every time I have a conversation in this Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memory series with the former students of Bhagwan's University, you know, you'll always have any number of such instances where, you know, students, they don't want to compromise on the values. And then, you know, they see the unseen hand of Bhagwan guiding them. And they start a new trend, you know. You become trailblazers. I mean, we are actually not starting. We are actually going back to what we originally were.
Absolutely.
And we have to regaining this, as Swami says, we have to wake up and regain the glory of the Sanatana Dharma. Wow. Well, there is so much. And I think this is the experience of every Sai devotee too, isn't it? Once you come, you have Bhagwan in your life, you want to walk on that path, and you make your little steps, and you see how Bhagwan comes forward and he aids you. And dear listeners, please feel free to share your experiments with Satya and Dharma. I think this is the most exciting thing for all of us in our lives. Our experiments with pure love, our experiments with righteousness, our experiments with walking on the path of integrity. I think this is what will help to bring back this lost glory of Sanatana Dharma. This is what will ensure that the entire world becomes Bharat, and all of us are Bharatiyas. We are completely in love with the Lord, in love with truth and righteousness. Thank you so much for being with us. So we'll continue. There's one more segment left in this chapter 17. If you're reading the Telugu Prema Vahini, then it is chapter 5. So we will do that and probably wrap up this long chapter 17 in the next session of Vahini Satsang. Thank you so much for being with us. As always, if you have any comments, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much, and Sai Ram.